This is a Squiz podcast. We're your shortcut to being informed.
This week's podcast is brought to you by BHP. Copper is a big deal in the energy transition because it's used to make electric vehicles, wind turbines, and solar panels. When it comes to producing copper responsibly, it's happening now at BHP. Good morning, I'm Alice Dempster.
And I'm Siobhan Moran McFarlane.
It's Monday the 29th of April. In your Squiz today, tackling Australian violence, Albanese heads to Alice, the King is back in action, and forget about Fuji. This is your Squiz today. Siobhan, we spoke on Friday about the National Violence Against Women crisis, and the conversation about that has continued over the weekend. Thousands of people have rallied in cities across Oz to demand more action from the government.
Yeah, and the other thing that kept the issue in focus was that while all of these protests were happening, especially yesterday, Alice, a Perth man was charged with murdering 30-year-old mother of four, Erica Hay, after her body was found on Friday. Police allege that 35-year-old Luke Sakua set their home alight and fled with her 3-year-old child, who has since been recovered and treated for smoke inhalation. And it makes Hay the 27th Australian woman to be murdered by a man this year.
Yeah, and that's prompted PM Anthony Albanese to call a national cabinet meeting on Wednesday to discuss violence against women with state and territory leaders. He attended the No More rally in Canberra yesterday, and after he was heckled by some attendees, admitted that governments of all levels must do better, including my own.
Yes, and Nationals leader David Littleproud has also called gender-based violence a scourge on society. But while all sides of politics agree that more does need to be done, Federal Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth reiterated yesterday the government's position that it won't establish a Royal Commission into domestic violence. Instead, she says that they will get on with the job of implementing the government's national plan to end domestic violence against women.
And as we mentioned on Friday, they'll review how that's working at the emergency roundtable on the 7th of May. So we're likely to hear a lot more about this topic over the next couple of weeks. Siobhan, PM Anthony Albanese has another tricky issue on his plate this week. Reports say that he'll be in Alice Springs today for the first time in more than a year.
Yeah, there's not much detail about what Albanese's visit will look like just yet, but it comes about a month after the NT Chief Minister, Eva Lawler, imposed a curfew on Alice Springs youth after a recent surge in violent crime. And we spoke about that quite a lot on the podcast at the time. Mm. You might remember the violence kicked off after a stolen car carrying several people crashed and left a teenage boy dead. It then escalated to a group of 70 people attacking the Todd Tavern in Alice's CBD on the 27th of March.
Yeah, that was when Lawler intervened by declaring a state of emergency and introducing the curfew, which has since expired. And just on that car crash that you mentioned, Siobhan, an 18-year-old man became the fifth person charged over it last week. So there's still a way to go on this yet. Hamas has released a new video of two hostages who were taken during the 7th of October attacks. And Siobhan, it's prompted their families to push the Israeli government to lock in a new hostage release deal.
The men's names are Omri Miran and Keith Siegel, who's an Israeli US citizen. And although the proof of life video doesn't have a date on it, Miran said he'd been captive for 202 days, and Siegel spoke about being unable to celebrate Passover, which ends tomorrow. So that's given their families hope that it was filmed recently. Israeli PM Benjamin Netanyahu's office hasn't responded to the video, but the men's families say that they will continue to fight for their return.
And the other thing is that Hamas also released a separate hostage video last week of another Israeli US hostage named Hirsch Goldberg Pollen. And as all of that's happened, Egyptian mediators have landed in Israel to continue ceasefire negotiations this week. A message now from our podcast partner, BHP. We hear a lot about the transition to renewable energy, but not so much about how it's actually going to be achieved. That's why BHP is raising awareness about its efforts to not only produce essential resources for the transition, like copper, but also reduce the greenhouse gas emissions it produces in the production of those resources. That's why BHP has committed to solar, wind, and battery agreements to help power their copper mine at Olympic Dam in South Australia. It's happening now at BHP. And you can find out more by visiting bhp.com/critical. A bit of good news from King Charles and his doctors, Siobhan. 2 months after he announced his cancer diagnosis, he'll resume his public duties in the UK this week.
Yes, although we should point out that he is still receiving treatment for his cancer, so he's not completely in the clear just yet. But Buckingham Palace says the King's doctors are very encouraged by his progress and are positive about his recovery. And another spokesperson said the King himself is greatly encouraged to be resuming some duties and very grateful to his medical team. So first up, we're going to see him and his wife, Queen Camilla, visit a cancer treatment centre on Tuesday local time.
Yeah, he's got a busy couple of months ahead too. The first anniversary of their coronation is coming up on the 6th of May. And the King and Queen are also preparing to host Japan's Emperor and Empress for a state visit in June. Of course, that's not to mention their potential visit to Oz later this year, which reports say could still be on the cards. Speaking of Japan, Siobhan, we have spoken a bit recently about tourists behaving badly, and now it's the Japanese who have been irked by tourist shenanigans at one of their most iconic sites.
Yes, so residents living near Mount Fuji have decided to erect a big black barrier above a convenience store, and that is to block a popular view of the landmark. And that's because locals say they've had enough of mostly foreign tourists who come and drop their rubbish, park illegally, and even climb on rooftops to try and get the perfect shot of the mountain with the small Lawson shop in front of it.
Yeah, photo enthusiasts say the juxtaposition has a reputation for being very Japanese, but not for long. As you say, a huge 2.5 metre by 20 metre mesh net will be put up to block out that view, which locals say is regrettable because of some tourists who can't respect rules.
You've got to behave yourself on a holiday, Alice. I've told you before.
Quiz the day, Siobhan. What are you drawing our attention to today?
Well, it's back to school for public school kids in the ACT, South Australia, Tasmania and New South Wales as term two kicks off today. So I just wanted to give a quick good luck shout out to all the parents, students and, of course, the teachers. And while we're talking about kids, if you haven't checked it out already, we have a fantastic Squiz Kids podcast. It's awesome. They cover all sorts of news and current events in a very family-friendly way. So if you'd like to have a listen to that, just search for Squiz Kids in your podcast app and hit follow.
Good one. And that's it for us today. Have a great start to the week and we'll be back with you tomorrow.
G'day, Kate Watson here, host of the News Club podcast, the place to go for conversations about the news. Never have we done an interview that has garnered so much positive feedback. I'm referring to my chat with Bernie Shakeshaft. He's the founder of Backtrack, a community-led organisation with a simple mission: keep kids alive, keep them out of jail, and help them chase their dreams. In the context of youth crime being a big news topic, I wanted to give you a chance to hear about his approach. Here's a snippet. Talk to me about that relationship between authorities and these kids, because they're already interacted at some level in most cases, as I understand it.
Yeah, let me take you back to the start, because when we first started, the coppers were going, oh, here we go. Every damn criminal in Armidale is going to be down here, bags not being their neighbours, and the cops would drive in and the kids would go out over the back fence, and this just went on for years and it was just like, this is getting so stupid. So I sat with a good mate of mine. It wasn't always easy, I can tell you. He was the inspector, so one of the most senior cops, and I went, this is just stupid. Like, you know, you got a kid coming in here with 14 offences for riding his push bike. Let's just stop it. Hasn't been quick, but I doubt there would be another community in Australia that has as good a relationship with the police as we have with these 5% of rough and tumble kids that are in every single town. So those coppers come down here, but they make the coffee, and it's senior cops, and it's detectives, and it's the Aboriginal liaison officer, and it's the junior constable. And now you can see this relationship. When the kids do, they've got a little social enterprise going, car washing, you know, where they might have 50 cars to wash in a day or whatever, and people come down and have a coffee and a biscuit and a chat while they get their car washed. And so do the police, bring the highway patrol car down there and watch that. And when the dog squad come through, and like everyone in town, you watch it light up on social media, you know, don't know what's going on. There's like 20 cop cars down there at Backtrack. Shit must have
just
really
getting their cars washed.
Yep. Or goofing around with the dogs, you know. And once you break that stuff down, it really makes a difference, you know.
To listen to the whole interview, just search for News Club in your podcast app.